Welcome to the Strange Motion Way podcast. I am Tim Strange, along with my hostess with the mostest,
Carrie Strange.
We're going to be bringing you a lot of interviews with custom people, hot rodders, street rodders, some drag racers. Yes, we're going to include some BMX and
cats.
Our other co-hosts are Turbo and Axel.
All right, Tim, let's get it started.
Okay, here we are for another episode of The Strange Motion Way. I like to sometimes say where we're at, so in the future we remember where we interview this. We are in Salina, Kansas. Lovely. It's 175 degrees out today, I think. I'm here with my great friend, Hall of Famer, Chris Ryan, out from Ryan's Rod and Custom in the whopping city of 96, North Carolina. So we are here for the KKWA Lead Sled Spectacular. So welcome, Chris. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Tim. Thanks for having me, man.
So a little background about Chris. Been building custom cars. We'll get into where he came from and what he's done. He's got a really pretty cool story. He's been in, we were trying to figure out, hundreds of magazines, from features to ads, PPG ads, Ron Francis Wiring, multiple magazines, from Wheel Hub ads and features and everything. And you couldn't pick up a magazine when you did that Continental that we'll talk about for a couple of years without seeing it, either a feature, a picture, event coverage, an ad. He's a two-time Hall of Famer. He's inducted in the Daryl Starbird National Rod and Custom Car Hall of Fame, which is now based in Lincoln, Nebraska. And he is a Custom Kemps of America, we go by, KKWA Hall of Fame member. That's not a bad introduction. That's a pretty good career there.
That sounds like you prepared that.
No,
thank you. I appreciate that.
Off
appreciate
the hook. The props, dude. Off the hook.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we're going to go back to the beginning of, did you grow up around cars, your dad, what got you in? You're a custom guy. We're custom guys at heart. You build pro tour stuff, you build vets, you build Broncos, you build everything. So what got you into cars?
Well, to step back a little bit, my dad and grandfather are in cars, and they are more into Model A's and doing original restorations and stuff. And that's where I learned to do that stuff. So when I was a kid, you know, 9, 10 years old, I was block sanding fenders and doors and cleaning up the shop just for my dad to keep him busy and happy. Even though I played football and raced motocross for years, my days off were spent block sanding doors and fenders and helping dad out of the garage.
Then you didn't learn. You were a slow learner because you're still doing that today.
Yeah, I know. You would think after all these years, you know, even though you're much older and have been doing this much longer than I have because of your age.
You're older than me.
So, we've been doing it a long time, and Tim, I get off on this shit. If I didn't get off on this, I wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
And my dad and grandfather instilled this in me. Although I was not an original guy, and we did original Model A's and original muscle cars, you know, the 60s muscle cars, and that's what they're into.
So, did they have a shop, or they just do it as a hobby?
It's a hobby.
Okay.
It was a hobby. You know, and when I was growing up, was not aware you could make a living doing this. How cool is that?
I'm still not sure.
I'm still not sure we can.
Yeah.
Somehow I'm still paying my bills and getting by doing what I love. Mm-hmm. So, and really we think about it, and this is a hobby of most people.
And yeah.
Tim, we're very fortunate we get paid to do what most people consider
a hobby. It is very stressful with the quality of cars. We're going to build something. Sometimes customers can be difficult, but the best good customers make it all worthwhile, which not everybody can work together. I figured that. Not everybody's built to be friends in this world, and not everybody's built to work together. So when you get a good customer, you build something good. But in the big picture, we're playing with cars.
Right on.
We're building stuff. We're building art with our hands for people that you can drive.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get you an art statement here in a minute. But when Dad and my granddad were doing original stuff, I just wanted to cut stuff up and modify it and change things and chop tops and add more horsepower. So,
was that the first time in your life that you let your dad down?
I think I have a long history of that. So, and that was sacrilegious at that time to modify things and not put the right nut or the right bolt or change motors or chop tops.
You're late 70s, early 80s at this time, right? You're a young kid.
I am.
Yeah.
Probably, exactly. Late 70s, early 80s, up to 85 or so. But I wanted to start modifying things. And I got tied up with a couple other people who started hot rodding, modifying customs. And then really I met a guy called Tony Phillips, who was a custom guy back in the day. And he kind of led me to the custom world, also in the KKWA or the KOA in the custom world. And that's what I fell in love with, you know, the Barris, the Winfield, the Starbird type stuff, where we were modifying things and making them better or changing the look of things. And Although I appreciate original cars, that's not where my heart's at.
Yeah.
You know, so. Anyhow, I'm morphed into where I'm at today then.
So then, I assume, I don't know. I know you went to college. You graduate high school, I assume. Maybe.
I did.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And
wait a minute, you assume?
Did you drive a hot rod to school or anything? What did you drive in school? High school.
I drove a Pinto station wagon. I went all out.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. My cousin Paige and me and her brother, we call him Blue, we took her Pinto Fun Wagon, which was a sedan delivery with a little round window, took it to the Street Machine Nationals and slept in it all weekend.
Yeah.
So I have fond memories of a Pinto wagon also, but it was like a delivery. It wasn't a wagon in the back. It wasn't all open. But.
Well, in the day, you know, that was an affordable car for what we had. And let me give my dad a little bit of credit here. So when I was 14, 15, he bought a 69 Camaro Z28. 30,000-mile original cross-ram car with a chamber exhaust, so 30,000 miles, which is a badass car in the early 80s, you know, and a 302 DZ motor. So I did have that car, which he kind of gave me, and we restored that together.
Wow,
so that was a good one. My dad helped me through, and also with painting and bodywork. And I'm not really sure when I painted my first car, but it was probably, I don't know, 9, 10 years old.
Yeah,
you know, when other kids were doing... You know, I'm doing what normal boys do, playing football or baseball or whatever, and I was learning how to paint Subarus and Camaros and
shit. Yeah, we painted square body farm trucks, put rockers and cab corners on them, and learned to paint with Centauri in the garage. So that's what I was doing in junior high and high school with my dad. So yeah.
He did instill some good things in me. However, we took what he taught me and kept going farther and farther outside of the normal dad box, if you will.
Yeah. And then you went to college.
I did. So I had a company called Elko Corporation, who makes electrical connectors at the time, kind of like AMP. They sponsored me to go to General Motors Institute in Flint, Michigan. So I'm from a small town to GMI in Michigan.
So let's slow back down a little bit. That you worked where?
Elko Corporation.
Okay. Was this a place you started in high school or right out of high school?
Right out of high school. I was 17 years old, and 2 weeks after high school, Elko sponsored me to go to GMI, General
Motors
Institute, Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
And so which they'll sponsor you as long as you go to school 3 months, come back, work for them 3 months, go to school 3 months, work for them 3 months. And I learned a lot at GMI at that time. And I still remember my chemistry professor was one of the big guys when the Fiero came out. Remember the Fieros?
Yeah.
So he had a Fiero in his office there too. So they taught me a lot. And mostly in machine design and design like that. So I spent 2 years there at General Motors Institute and went back to Penn State, and I graduated with my BS from Penn State.
You have a bullshit degree.
I do.
I knew it.
It works, right?
I knew it. Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, and I was blessed with that ability to run my mouth. Sometimes things aren't appropriate coming out of it.
And then where did you end up?
So I went to Penn State, and I went back to work at Elko, the company sponsored me.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked in the industrial engineering department there for a couple of years, which was, I appreciate everything you did for me. So if you're listening from Elko, which I don't think they're no longer in business, I'm pretty sure you did, but I'm glad I'm out of there. I was in the IE department.
But what is that?
Industrial engineering department.
Okay.
So my job, if you ordered a connector from us, and so Tim ordered blah, blah, blah connector. All right. So I got full prints of that connector out. I don't design it. I don't engineer the connector. I don't the process to build it. I basically pull a print out the Tim orders and go out the floor and relay to people on the floor how to build that connector.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my job, which was, if you're an Emmy, that's boring because we want to design stuff and do stuff.
Yeah.
So you build cars now, and I build cars. So instead of building that car and getting your hands on and welding and fabricating and body and painting and chassis design, machine design, you just tell the people how to do it.
Yeah.
That's not where your heart's at, is it?
No.
That's not that.
So how long were you there after that?
Too long.
Too long.
2 years.
And then where'd you go?
So I left there, and I went into the car industry. And
this whole time when you were working at Elko, were you playing with, did you have a hot rod? Did you still have the Camaro?
I sold the Camaro to finish my last year of school because, you know, that costs dollar bills.
Yeah.
So I had no hot rod at that time, and I started buying and fixing up wrecks and cars and selling one of friends' car lot.
How old are you at this time?
At that time, I was 23-ish at that time, 22, 23. And I did okay with that. And then I got the idea, so I'm done in the industrial engineering department. I'm not going anywhere at Elko. I'm not happy here. I appreciate it. So I started
It's a good job, but you're not feeling fulfilled.
Exactly. Yeah. And I hate to talk ill about those folks at Elko, because they gave me a jump start in my career, in my life that I wouldn't have without them. So thank you. I appreciate it. Having said that, I'm glad I'm out of there. So anyhow, I left Elko and started a car lot. I went in debt, $60,000, and I bought a car lot. And my family thought I was retarded, which, you know, you kind of do too now, I think. But I was a little slow at that time. So I started buying and selling and fixing wrecks and cars and flipping them. And I kept gravitating more and more towards hot rods and customs. And then I got a second lot and moved on and more towards customs. And so
you had two lots at one time?
Three.
This was up in Pennsylvania area.
Pennsylvania, yeah.
Like what area of Pennsylvania?
Altoona State College area, Penn State area.
Okay.
Yeah. About right in the middle of the state, central PA.
But small, you went to school in Bellwood?
I did. Bellwood, Pennsylvania.
Which is a small world that our friend Dan Baker, which I need to get him on this podcast, yes. Lumencraft Grills. Did you guys went to school together? Or you just knew each other? He's younger, though, isn't he?
Oh, geez, thanks. No, he's older.
Is he? Why does he look so much better than us?
He takes care of himself.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, we don't. So I got Dan Baker's story. So we didn't just go to school together. We played Little League baseball together.
Oh, okay.
So that's how far Dan and I go back.
How old is Dan?
Dan's 2 years older than we are.
Oh, okay. Well, you're a couple years older than me. I want to make sure that's on record.
Yeah. Hey. But this is Tim's podcast.
We're all old, though.
So he can make up the rules as he goes. Everything he says may or may not be true or accurate.
Or Carrie can edit that out. She can edit that out.
So, but Dan's a great guy. So I had the car for a while, and I started restoring cars again, getting into hot rods and customs, bending metal to that. And then I found out the buying and selling cars and flipping cars financed my hot rod love. And then I keep gravitating away from selling cars and buying cars and gravitating more towards hot rods and doing more customs.
How many years did you run the car lots?
So that would have been 93 to...
Like how big were you? You said that three at one time. How many cars? Did you have 100 cars on the three lots or more than that?
Oh, no, more than that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I'd say 250.
Oh, wow.
300.
Wow. And how many people did you have working for you to keep all that going?
Probably about nine, I'm guessing, nine, yeah. 10.
Wow.
So, but I did that for like 7 years and then started to liquidate that. And then my dad took the one car lot and then the other car lot. And I was left with one car lot at that time. And I kind of made arrangements with my brother-in-law and gave him that car lot and went into the hot rod and custom world full time then, if you will.
What year was that?
Down South Carolina. So that would have been 2001.
Okay.
2000.
You're
full time, that would have been 23 or 40.
42 years old now?
Yeah. Okay. 32 years old.
32. Yeah, not 40. 32. Okay. I was trying to do good at math.
What are you talking about? Oh, yeah. Now I'm 55.
But, yeah.
But at that time.
See, I'm just 52.
Yeah. Again, this is Tim's podcast. Tim makes up the rules and lies as much as he wants.
Some days we feel like we're 80, though.
So, and I do from crawling around the floor and block sanding and moving things and lifting things. I look for easier ways to do things. Where before I would just run it out and do it.
I remember working at the last collision shop I worked at 30 years ago now, and I just dropped down and kneel on the ground. And the old guy, we called him Gravy. He did the new cars in the corner. You know, he was allegedly chicken wiring cars and putting them on the lot and sending them out the next day in the back lot of the Chevy dealership. He's like, man. You're going to regret that. You got to get on a pad. You got to get on a stool. Well, I do have bad knees. I've had knee surgery, but also because of BMX and stuff too. But he was right. You got to take care of yourself, but we don't.
We don't. And I don't know about you, but for years I thought I was ahead of the curve. I thought I'm not going to be that old guy that has aches and pains and slow and moans. Every time he gets up off the garage floor, concrete floor, he moans and groans and takes him 20 seconds just to stand his ass up in the air. I thought I was ahead of the curve. I was going to be that guy.
But
I am slowly getting there.
Yeah. But
I'm becoming an old guy.
Touch on that. You raced motocross for a while. How old were you when you were racing motocross, and how many years did you do that?
I quit 28 years.
Oh, wow.
Before 32. I played football for years. I had was planning on going to Coast Guard Academy to play football in college, and then I screwed up my arm.
What position did you play?
Center and nose guard.
Okay. I played only in junior high. I was center.
So... and then I screwed up my thumb and they wouldn't take me because I had surgery. So I ended up going to be an engineer and design cars instead. So that was a condensed version of how I got there.
The motocross, along with BMX, but motocross is very hard on body.
Yes.
It is very hard on it.
So I raced, 250C, 250B, schoolboy 250B, and and stuff. And then I turned 30. I thought, well, 30, I'll be a vet. You know what? You know a vet? I can run a vet class. Mm-hmm. So me, 30 years old, racing for years, I thought, I'll just go in there and kick everybody's ass. Yeah. I was wrong. Because all those guys doing that were the same, had the same mentality.
Yeah.
So I, you
know, Roger Berman's a heck of a motocross guy. He was Honda factory sponsored and three wheelers back in the day, and he still rides. And it's, but he's all beat up because of motocross too.
It'll whip you up, and it'll ankles, toes, arms, and you got to think of where to be your tongue.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many times I've been pulling my tongue from racing motocross. Yeah. That sounds stupid, but that happens. You know. But I still love it. I do not ride motocross anymore. I'm in the, you know, I still have street bikes. I would like to ride motocross again, or even like a hare scramble or stuff like that, and get back into it. And but some of the people, the friends and family that I talk to now about that, think I'm even more stupid than I was beforehand. Well, so
that'll happen. Yeah.
But I think once racing's in your blood, it's in your blood. You and BMX. Mm-hmm. How old are you?
52, and I'm still riding a 20-inch bicycle. And
right.
I've made three national events. Carrie's still racing. She's got a couple seconds at nationals this year. It's just our stress relief from the car world. You got to have something.
It's in your heart, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's in your heart. It's not about going fast and winning. We think we're a badass rider, and we can do this, and we can do that. We're not.
Yeah.
But if it's in your heart, and you love doing it, go ahead and do it. You know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, so your BMX and my motocrossers, same.
Yeah.
I would think feeling or why we do that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so get back on the car. I like to hear background of other people's stories of, you know, stuff they do other than just car stuff. It's not, it's a car podcast, but it doesn't have to be. So I want to make sure we talked about that. So what was your, do you remember, I was on a podcast somebody, what was your first good customer car? And I was like, I was totally blank. I couldn't remember because I did a lot of cheaper stuff for local guys. And then it was always building stuff for myself. And that's what kind of got us our start. We got a car and a magazine. I quit the dealership and went building hot rods now for 30 years. So what, do you remember something that was like your first cool customer car, or it was like you were just building stuff and then you built did you build something for yourself to promote yourself and start taking it around?
I did, you know, and that's a great advertisement we can do. Take all the money to have extra money instead of investing in, you know, drugs, alcohol, or football, or whatever.
Some people do the stock market, I've heard. Some people do that, but or investment, you know, properties or something. But
I took any expendable funds I had, invested in a car to build a car. And I remember I did Fat Caddy, I don't know how about 20-some years ago.
Yeah. And which car was the Fat Caddy?
The 48.
The Fat Caddy?
The 48 convertible.
What color was it? Bronze-ish?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I think I had it.
You brought that to the studio.
Yeah.
We
should drive it anywhere. It probably had 20, 30,000 miles on it. Yeah, I kept bugging it for years.
I think that's the car we met here, KKWay, Salina.
Yeah.
I came 1 year, brought my 54. Came here, parked on the main drag, and slept in my chair because I was exhausted.
I
came by myself. And you're like, who's this asshole not talking to anybody? But I think we went to dinner or something that weekend. I met Chris Carlson that weekend, too, at the restaurant. And the custom shows are just great. We're going to get sidetracked a little bit here. But I go to many shows around the country. And the custom shows and custom people are just like, they're just like no other people. You know, we're hanging out with all the other Hall of Famers today, and they're just cool, like hanging out with Jack and Jack Walker and Lou Castabella and hanging out, you know, talking to Daryl Starbird, and they're just cool people. It's like, these were my heroes, like they were yours. And it's like if you were a basketball player and you get to hang out with, who's the guy that's got the shoe? Michael Jordan. If you're a basketball player and you want to hang out, to sit underneath a tent with Michael Jordan, that doesn't happen very often, but you can do that here.
Is that cool? We can do that?
Yeah. See, custom guys are just, they're just chill, man.
You're exactly correct. Custom guys want to see other custom guys do well. Mm-hmm. When you come out with a new car, Tim, I want to eyeball that car. I'm going to look it over, and I want you to explain to me exactly what you did, because you might not just look into something, pick up all the subtleties that went into the car or time spent in those places. And we go here, and I was here with Barris and Winfield and, you know, your Jack Walker and Johnny D's over there now, and Hines would come there and help chop cars.
Yeah.
And Daryl, you know, we were with Daryl in Lincoln the other week and see him now. We drive him around. Is it cool or surreal to you that we even get to talk and associate with this
We're friends with our heroes.
And we get to pick their brains and talk to them about stuff and hang out with them.
Yeah.
No other industry can you do that with, you know? And I believe some customers feel there's competition between the custom people or the car people. I don't think there is. I want to see you do
well.
I mean,
there is. Everybody wants to do good. You know, you still, I don't really care about awards as much anymore because I've kind of, it's not like I don't want to keep growing my business, but you do that when you just kind of start building your cars.
Yeah.
That gets you noticed. To me, magazines still mean a lot. There's less magazines, but I've got shot this year for two magazines, and it's just me and my dad's car, and it's so cool because it's going to be in a magazine.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, oh, it's featured on a website. You know, it's still cool.
So, have you explained to anybody your dad's car, we'll call it that. Have you explained to these folks your dad's car?
I think we did. I did an interview with my dad that we haven't, at this time, we have not posted that yet, but I did an interview with my dad. So. We talked a little bit about the Chevelle, but I don't think we got into detail on it, but why we built it and where he came from. And
that's a,
yeah.
The car is badass.
Thank you.
No doubt about it, the car's badass. Yeah. And I saw it at SEMA. We had it at SEMA there, and you know, we had our cars there, and we talked about it. But I learned more about the car this weekend. And the car's badass, but the story's even better. You got to build a hot rod with your dad.
Yeah, we didn't do everything together because we live 9 hours apart. But there was at least four or five different times that he came down and spent a week with me. And I shut down the shop and I didn't do any customer cars. Just me and him worked on the car during the day. I mean, he was there on the last push. Of course, everything was mocked up and built and all that stuff. And that's a little story on this. We'll get, you got me sidetracked, but we'll get back to Chris here in a minute.
It's all my fault.
Yeah, and I lost my mom during the build of this, and we got back on it, and that was me and my dad's happy phone calls. Instead of talking about mom and getting all depressed, as talked about colors, upholstery stuff, so we kind of got back on it and got it done. Took it to SEMA as a non-runner. It did run, but we pushed it in and out 2 years ago. Now this summer, finally taking it out to some outdoor events. And just, you know, got a lot of stuff that my dad did didn't work. But the last push, it was... He said I worked hard, and Carrie helped and did some of the interior. She didn't do the seats. My buddy Mike did the seats. But he says that she has to pay, or she tells him, how is that? Carrie's here too. Every hour that she works on the car, that's one Hallmark movie, Christmas movie that she's got to watch. My dad has to watch with her. That's payback when he comes to visit now. But we took the week off, and everything was mocked up.
He still owes me $17.
But, you know, we put the motor and tranny in the chassis. He ran the brake lines. We heat wrapped the exhaust. Again, all the stuff, you know, how you build a hot rod, 47 time mock-ups. We put the body on the chassis. We hung the doors, put the wheels, tires, brakes, rotors, axles, fluids in it, all that in like 3.5 days, and then loaded it up and took it to Ricky Burks, my wiring guy. Mm-hmm. So it was like, we worked hard to thrash to get that to make the deadline to go to SEMA. But that last week, he's like, oh, you worked me too hard. I was like, it's just a payback.
Right.
And he's like, what's this pay? Well, this is our car together, because working on the farm, you know, he had cattle and a bunch of acres and a Christmas tree farm. And I was like, when are you going to pay me? He goes, I'll feed you and put a roof over your head. You know, so I was still living at home. So I told him he wants to come and help me in the shop because I'm so busy. He goes, what's that pay? I says, I'll feed you and put a roof over your head. He doesn't think it's such a good deal now.
That's such a good deal. Well, the car's killer, but the story is even better. And I know we're supposed to be talking about my car or some shit now, right? So we got sidetracked because, you know, Tim and I have been friends for a few years now, more than a few years now. But we are in Salon, Kansas for the Legislative Spectacular. Do people know that you're nominated for the Hall of Fame here?
No, I don't think they do. So
Tim does not just build hot rods and traditional cars, which he does, and pro touring cars, which he does, but he builds customs. That Buick that I saw with that dash, and I think it was at the Peterson for a while. Or
the Paul and Eric Hansen Buick.
The Hansen Buick is badass. So. Right. Tim is nominated for the Custom Camps Hall of Fame this weekend, and let's pray and hope he gets in there. And hopefully, next podcast we can say congratulations. Good to you, we'll man.
I've been on the list for 4 years, four different times. And it's cool to be even thought of with our heroes. You know, I still think there's 100 guys that obviously deserve it before me, and some that have not been nominated because people forget some of the guys that haven't been in as many magazines. But it is an honor to be even thought of in the room of those people. So,
and the guys that are in the industry, that are in the Hall of Fame, that live and breathe custom cars, are the guys voting on this.
Yeah.
So that, to me, means more so.
Your heroes and your peers.
That's who's deciding whether you win or not. I don't mean to belittle anybody, but some schmuck sitting behind a desk that doesn't know shit about cars. These are people that are in the industry, know cars, and build cars for there. So, all right, cool. All right, so there's our plug for Tim. So,
okay, thanks.
That's all right for Tim. Tomorrow night.
So, okay, you built the Caddy. When you build cars for yourself, you like big cars, big Caddies and stuff, and now Chryslers and stuff. So what was the first like car you built for a customer that got a lot of press?
So, cool. Steve White, who has a Chrysler and Ford dealership in North Carolina and South Carolina on the East Coast there. I built him a 57 Chevy convertible. And this is probably late 90s, I'm guessing, which was a pretty badass car at the time. And we've done several cars for him. And the reason I bring him up is he passed away recently. And we built a car called the Root Beer Float for him. And matter of fact, I think it was not that long ago, 10, 12 years ago, I think when I came to do your show.
And the Root Beer Float, I came for a few days to help you on that car and built some stuff underneath, bullshit underneath the car you made me do. But
we took that to Detroit. And
So I think just sold, I know a guy that bought it at an auction for one of his clients that sold for $240 or something last week, weeks ago.
So they emailed me, the guy from Charlotte Motor Speeders texted me with this sold, and he's so proud it was the highest selling on the sale. But what it sold for, you and I would not build it for that. But I'm happy it went for that kind of money.
I can't imagine a chrome bill on a big caddy with that car.
The chrome. All right, so the car sold for $259, but today to build that car, just double that. It's $500,000 to build that car today. But I was happy to do that because it is an older built car and it has old technology in it, but it's still a badass car.
In the open market, it's still good value.
So whoever bought it for $259 got a heck of a deal, because if you came to me and asked me to build that car, it'd be twice that amount. So the chrome bill. So we have several chrome companies we work with, and the chrome bill on that car at the time was pushing $60,000.
Yeah.
And I had...
it'd be $100 now.
Yeah. And can we mention people? Yeah. John Wright did it.
Yeah.
And John does, and John does chrome, and Advance does a chrome. So I love them both. They're great people.
To me, there's a handful of top-notch chrome shops, and both of those you just said are towards the top-notch.
Yes. I don't want to belittle any chrome shop, but John Wright and Advance, they're badass chrome players. Mm-hmm. Take care of you, and they take care of their customers, period.
And they're good people.
Good people. Yeah. And that's who we want to support. And in the industry, that's who. Yeah. But John did that at the time, and I remember that chrome bill, and
you're like, man, I'm glad a customer's paying for this.
So when we built that car, and he gave me pretty much free reign to do what I wanted with the car. He says, I want this 53 convertible, blah, blah, blah. And we painted that candy brown at the time, candy root beer, if you will. And so I call him up and I said, hey, we're going to paint your car. We're going to paint this color. Candy root beer. He says, you mean brown, Chris? Well, not quite brown, but
there was a stretch in the industry. There was a lot of brown cars done, but that was early on. Like the brown cars that I remember that got pressed was you built that one, and Dave Tucci had a grade 8 chop section 36-3 window that was brown. And those are the cars that I and people started building brown cars after
they did
that.
It's almost like the Prowler Orange cars too back in the day. Prowler Orange is or a version of that was everywhere. But he treated me well. It was a great client. I probably wouldn't be where I'm at today without his help in doing several cars.
That car was everywhere.
So, was it the first car? No. Was it the best car? No. But I would say it's hard to pick one car, but one client / friend, that was him.
Yeah. The right guy, good working relationship.
Yes.
And then he lets you create. So, you mentioned that Buick. Those customers let me create.
Yeah.
So,
and it's not a simple business transaction building a car.
Mm.
You're married to that person for a year or so. You're going to have conversations. You're going to have disagreements.
You're going to have dinners with them.
You're
going to go on trips because you might go to the shows together. And
it's not a simple business transaction. It's a relationship there. So, make sure you get along with your customers and do your best to do that, because it's not a simple boom, boom, thank you. Let me get out of here. Get out of your way.
Yeah. Jump around. We don't really have to say, but you started a vehicle for a guy and you didn't like the guy.
Yes.
So you recommend it to one of our mutual friends, and he's getting along great with that guy. It's just some people work better with some people and some people not. It's not a factory. We're both small shops. I have no employees. I have a wiring guy, stereo guy, upholstery people. I don't build motor. And now you're mostly by yourself now. Right. So you want to enjoy the process. I have no desire to have 15, 20 people, roadster shop, 70 people. I have no desire to run that. I still want to build cars and create and not be stuck in the desk controlling the crew.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not going to get rich doing this. I'm not going to have a jet. My wife thinks we're going to have an island in the Caribbean someday, but I don't think we are. But she just left the room, so she didn't hear that. We want to create. We're artists, and we want the process to be good. And we interview the people before we build a car. If we don't think we can get along with them, we're not going to build them a car.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just, like I said, it's not a simple transaction. There'll be a year of phone calls, pictures, emails, discussions, disagreements. Just because you disagree doesn't mean you're, you know.
There's and there's always deal. Something that does as a builder is like, no, I'm not doing that on your car. Yeah. I won't do that. No.
And I don't know about you, but sometimes if I'm building a new car, Tim, and you say I want to do blah, 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 I'm really struggling with that myself. I'll just shelf that for a month or two. And I'll drag my feet on it.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't convince you, Tim, that's not the way to go. Let's go this way.
Yeah.
I'll just slow up.
Yeah.
To hopefully you see it my way.
I just kind of had that. You know, we do some cars for private collector guy, and he didn't want to use a couple of these top shops that we were talking about. And now there's fitment issues of some of the pieces and parts that we're redoing on a car. So I finally laid it down. I was like, you got to let me use the quality shops for this because of the working relationship, and I know what they can do and the quality. So that's, we're at that stage now. So got to be upfront with them. So.
It's just not quality of parts. We have no standards in our industry on aftermarket parts, or I don't care if it's, we're talking about chrome platers or wiring harness people or steering column people or aftermarket taillights. There are no standards that we have. So I think when we're in the industry long enough, we're aware of who's the great chromer, who's the great wiring horse, who builds the best taillight for this, who does this. And they, even if they don't, we have problems, you know, they'll back up their product and help you out.
We're lucky now to be in the industry where we are. When we started, you had to go to the junkyards and get the parts and do this and adapt stuff.
Mustang.
Chuck Lombardo just passed away here a couple months ago, and I got to know him being on he was a Pennsylvania guy.
Yeah,
his California street rods. John, I don't know if you knew he passed here a few months ago.
I did not know he passed.
And I was on advisory board at WildTech with him in Pennsylvania. And he says him and his couple buddies were the first guy that got like riding customer street rodder, going to the junkyard and cutting out a Mustang 2 Crossmember and adapting that into a street rod.
Yeah.
Now there's probably 40, 50 companies that make a Mustang 2 Crossmember. Oh, we have a lot of good parts that we can buy, but not everything's good on the market.
Exactly. But, you know, cutting that Mustang 2 front out and morphing it to an aftermarket vehicle, I said, look at, you know, Fat Man Fabrications and Heights and six gazillion, well, I might be exaggerating a little bit, frame chassis companies have taken that Mustang 2 front end and made a living and support more families, whether employees and secretaries and manufacturers, as they're doing it for us now. And it makes our life easier too.
Yeah.
Because not everything, I know Roaster Shop and several companies can make you a chassis for darn near anything.
Yeah.
But, you know,
dollar
bills come in there. So, so for a while, we would take and clip the front ends on things. You know, four bar the rear and clip the front end of it, you know, which Fat Man was great for doing that.
Yeah. That's what we did on the Chevelle you mentioned too. It's got a Fat Man front and Ride Tech rear. And because I wanted to build it like me and Dad, of course, we didn't have the budget to buy a chassis anyway. And I wanted to cut it up like if we were building it in the 70s or something like that. So,
but you know, Brent and Tim Van Vort, you know, he's a genius guy.
Yep.
And if he didn't know, he would over engineer something to make sure it wouldn't break. And you've used their, I feel like I'm plugging them though. Should I even be doing that? I don't
know. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
But their stuff, I would say it may not be the prettiest to look at.
It works and it goes down.
That sucker is heavy duty.
They put 20,000 miles on that Royal Purple panel truck that Fat Man built the chassis for. So, and they're good. Some of the best people you ever want to meet.
Right. I got them on my cell phone now. So I'll call them with the issue and Tim and Brent will answer the phone and help me out with things. And, so I'm working on a couple other customs and they helped me out with the chassis on that. And that Packard, and you know, it's a one-off chassis. And
we'll get to the Packard. We'll get to the Packard here.
Yeah. I thought I'd keep talking with my buddies in the hot rod world too. I'm going to get there too.
Okay. So we're back to the root beer float now. Back on track here.
So we're stuck in caddy world for a while. So we did, I'm not really sure, 5 or 6 or 7 caddies. We got stuck in that pigeonhole, which is not a bad deal.
Yeah.
And I love big cars. I love the big fat fender cars. I am not a little dude. I cannot fit in 30s cars.
Yeah.
Tim, you're not a little dude either.
Yeah.
When's the last time you could actually fit in a 30s car coupe?
Well, you got to make
comfortably.
You make some work to make them get in there. So, like the Hanson car I built, the 4-door, it's hard to get in because the 4-door, the doors are short. But once you're in there, it's comfortable because it's almost my size. So we build it so you can. But get it in and out of the door because it's a 4-door. It'd be better if it was a 2-door. But so all this time you're building caddies, some for yourself. You built a couple of really good cars there and customer cars. And you built, when did the, well, I'm blank on that guy's name, the Black Firebird.
Oh, geez, thanks for putting me on the spot. And I hope you don't listen to this, but I shouldn't remember.
It was a Black Firebird.
Yeah, a 69 Firebird.
Yeah.
And he wanted one, since he had one when he was younger. He wanted to reproduce that Firebird. But now I'm into customizing and modifying things. I love the pro touring stuff.
And that thing was slightly chopped, wasn't it? And the windshield was leaning back. And a lot of people missed that.
Yeah.
Because you like to have the tops down on your convertibles.
Yeah.
And when that top was down, you couldn't understand what went on with that car until the top was up. I think I made you put the top up one time. I call bullshit on this. And it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. So it was...
It was.
It was a custom Pro Tour mix car.
But that didn't exist in the day.
Yeah. They still barely do. But yeah.
But Pro Touring cars, I love Pro Touring cars. I like doing that because I'm learning to whip up on stuff and autocross and beat on stuff. You know, the Ride Tech guys and some of the guys have moved me in that direction. But I'm still a custom guy at heart. So that Firebird, Trans Am, if you will, he won the day. So we ended up cutting that top, laying that windshield back. Flush mounted the glass and round the corners and changed the rocker panels and changed done the pinch wells in the bottom of the car. And we had the guy, Tom, who's a great metal guy.
Tom Opoff.
I like to think I'm a metal guy. Tim, I like to think you're a metal guy, but some guys are just above us.
Tom's a wizard. Yeah. Tom's
a metal dude. Saltworks. Beyond our.
Saltworks. Speed and. Is it Speed and Design? Saltworks.
Saltworks.
On social media. Yeah.
I don't know. It's Tom to me. I'm
Florida. Yeah. Good guy. I met him way back when he worked for Dave Tucci, Tucci Hot Rods.
He was in Indiana at this time, struggling a little bit.
Which just kind of went on his own after he left Tucci's. Yeah.
Yeah. He was in Indiana, and he did some of the metal work for me on that car, too. And Tom's a metal wizard. You know?
Yeah. He is.
I tell people I'm a metal guy, but yeah, I don't compare to that shit right there. And I'm sure, and I kind of know where you're at, Tim. You don't either. Sorry, I hate to break it to you, but some guys are just metal guys can make metal moves.
He takes it out, or you can't see where he welded it. You know, it's that.
He's a talented metal guy. Yeah. But, you know, we're more, I would say, paint body design guys. And, you know. But anyhow, so we did that Firebird, and I don't think most people know what they're looking at.
Yeah.
At that time.
Definitely on that car.
But we did, you know, we did their Mustangs and Camaros and first-gen Camaros, gazillions of them and the Mustangs and that kind of stuff. But my heart was always in customs and changing things to accentuate the car. I'm not into doing modifications, just to say, this car has 47 modifications. Well, four would have done well.
Yeah.
Don't modify shit just to modify it. If it doesn't accentuate the car, make it look better or perform better, don't do it.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's hard to compete with the gazillions of engineers that the guys in Detroit have working on this stuff.
Yeah.
But we can improve cars, but don't change stuff just to change it. Yeah. That's one of my pet peeves.
Yeah. So then also through this time, you did a couple vets for people.
Yeah.
With, you know, aftermarket chassis and stuff. And did a string of vets there for a while, didn't you?
We
got some vet magazines and stuff like that and pressed with those.
We seem to always have a vet or two there. And we just debuted a vet at SEMA this year. A C2 66. I hate to say everyday vet, but it's easily attainable by most people. It was a 66 Ride Tech chassis, Wilwood brakes, Connecting Cruise LS3, Inglaze injected, Chuck Hanna interior.
Mm-hmm.
We changed a couple of body mods and cleaned the vets up, you know, changed the window openings a little bit and the rockers on it a little bit. But that's a type of car that a normal, somewhat talented body paint car builder could knock that car off and make a badass Corvette out of it. I think that. And do paint that car.
That's one thing you can do with the crate motors available and the chassis options and stuff like that. A decent, handy home builder can build quite a car anymore.
Yeah.
With, you know, may not be able to do body mods and chop the top and get it right, but you got the money, you can buy a...
Right. Build one out of a catalog, almost.
Yeah, you can.
We did one of the more odd things we did, we took a 76 Corvette, which is a reconstructed title. She bought it off of eBay. We did several cars for the Marshals at that time, several Corvettes, I don't know, three or four for them.
For the same people?
Yes. And so I would like to think that speaks something of us to do multiple cars for the same people. But she bought this car off of eBay. I wanted to say it was a 76 Corvette, salvage title, piece of junk. I mean, and she wanted to rebuild this car. I said, Mrs. Marshall, if you want to do a 76 Corvette, let's just start and buy the nicest 76 Corvette we can for maybe like $7,000 or $8,000. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's start there. No, I want to save this car. So we got it, and I think what we used off it was like the quarter panels. That was it. So we put it on the lift, and, you know, and they do have a frame. They're not all loot. They're not all fiberglass. They do have a chassis. And the chassis is bent in half, and, you know, and everything else is right. Even the bird cage, the T-tops go in it, you know. was rotted out. Oh, so, but anyhow, come the end of the day, ended up with a twin rail tube chassis from SR3 and a Dodge Viper rear end and LS powered, 480 horsepower. And it was stupid fun. I hate to, I know you're picturing a C3 Corvette now.
I think I just
didn't look in your face.
But this is the car I know where the story's going. I think I know the ending story of this car.
So, I did tell you that. Okay. So it's rather quick, and it's almost like a go-kart with this new chassis under. Everything's mm-hmm. rigid. It's not stiff. So you feel like you're riding a go-kart. And, so it made the cover of Vet magazine, and the car did well for us. And
it's like a candy Brandywine, candy Brad, something beautiful.
Yeah, candy Brandywine, yeah.
Which Chris, you know, guys don't know if you just now looking him up or whatever, is candies and colors and pearls is kind of his wheelhouse. He's very good at candies and pearls and picking the right colors for the right car.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm a paint dork because I think the first thing, all right, I'll get the Corvette, then I'll tell you about paint. So, long story short, well, this car did extremely well for us, Corvette, and I'm not a Corvette guy. I do tons of Corvettes. I told Mrs. Marshall, when you start driving this car, be very, very careful. Very, very careful. It's stupid fast. It's like driving a fast-ass go-kart is exactly what it is. So the first time she drove it, she hit the gas, and she drove through her garage and hit her new Cadillac, went on the back side of it. And pretty much destroy the car.
Yeah, I remember you sent me a picture of the gas filler in the middle of the back deck that was like 2 inches off the one side because it tweaked everything so bad. So.
Yeah.
But, and you rebuilt it, didn't you?
We did. Did it again, yeah.
Did you have to get a new chassis and everything too?
No, it was mostly just fiberglass.
Okay.
Yeah. Just screw up the fiberglass. But I felt so bad for her as well, you know. But and we think we can – today's cars are a stupid amount of horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
And people say they don't build them like used to. I said, you're darn right. They build them a heck of a lot better today than used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so appreciate the older cars, the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and even the 80s cars now are getting hot.
Mm-hmm.
I so appreciate them. But as far as drivetrain goes, we're so far ahead of today. And the guy says, well, I have this Corvette or I have this Hellcat. It's got 700, 800, 900 horsepower, blah, blah, blah. I can drive it. I says, I understand that. But these are hot rods. They do not have all the savior-ass features that your new Hellcat mm-hmm. or your new Corvette has.
Yeah.
They do not have the analog brakes and the traction control. And,
yep.
and if you're driving like an idiot and you lose traction, them computers in these new cars will save your ass.
Yeah.
We don't have them in hot rods.
I did a vehicle for somebody that wanted to have, you know, 500 horse LS and the supercharged intercooled this and that on it. It was Terry with a C10 Domino. And then when he drove it the first time, it scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
You know, it was like 700 horsepower. And he goes, I've never really had a true hot rod with true 300 horsepower. He's, I realized that now. And I always told him about the traction control. And even your new truck's probably got 300 some horsepower, but it's just set up different. And he's like, dude, this thing, when you get on the throttle, it's like driving on ice. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I kind of had to learn to drive it all over the place. And it scared him the first time. So, yeah, it is different. So
we like to think we're better drivers than we actually are. And we both drive hot rods, fast cars a lot.
Yeah.
And could I actually drive 700, 800, 900 horsepower without the savior-ass features and traction control? Probably not.
I'm around autocross a lot now, and there's a lot of guys that, you know, they work for a living in the autocross. They're hobbyists and not professional drivers, but man, there's some wheelmen out there and women. They can drive big horsepower cars and stuff, and it's impressive when you see people, especially as long as I've been doing it, and people learn their skill through the years. I've been announcing autocross now for 10 years, and definitely, a lot of these guys put a lot of effort into it. They're driving coaches and clinics and schools and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's neat, but yeah.
They're not average drivers. No. They're not. If you
no, they're still weekend drivers, but you know, a lot of them people put a lot of effort into their programs. So, but
yeah. Well, I'm glad they do because that opens up doors for us. We build more pro touring cars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then, you know, at Columbus for Good Guys, they do Street Machine of the Year on Friday at noon. Anybody that wants to be in contention for that, make them run 2 autocross laps,
mm-hmm.
which is good because it's showing the car is drivable. I keep telling them, you know, nobody listens to me. I'm just Ron Burgundy over there on the microphone, but that kind of pigeonholes, there's been some cars it's built. It was like, oh man, that's probably a contender for Street Machine of the Year, but it wasn't a hardcore pro tour looking car. It more had a little more hot rod stuff to it. And the guy didn't even take the car over to that area because, oh, it's not what they're looking for. This was 5-6 years ago because they want an autocross. They want a pro tour car because that's what they're making them go around the autocross. You're not going to get a pro street car. We had one come over this year, but it didn't pass tech for something. So it didn't have an overflow tank or something like that on it.
I got a tech story for you.
But yeah, I know that what you're talking about. I don't know if we should tell that story or not. But yeah, anyway, so then they're in the vets. You also did some Broncos for people too, didn't you?
Right on. So I would say the first Bronco we did was for Mr. Patton of Patton Air Compressors. And I'm not a four-wheel drive guy. I don't know anything about it, but I'm into modifying things. So,
and this was kind of the stuff. The Broncos are very hot. You can buy a whole body now. Correct. This was their first one you built was kind of at the beginning of the Bronco phase.
Yes, that was that's probably 8-10 years ago, I'm guessing that was the first one I built.
Really? Yeah.
Probably 10 years ago. And, you know, people were not putting Coyotes in Broncos, and people were not modifying Broncos. Yeah. So we got this Bronco for Mr. Patton, and he wanted one forever. And I'll give you the quick version of it. And, you know, we suicide doors, cut the top off. I made a true roaster. And we put a Coyote motor in it with 6-speed automatic.
It's a lot of motor for a Bronco.
It is. And because, you know, center of gravity is high. And the Coyote, even though it's a 5-liter, is physically a huge motor. Mm-hmm. It just does not fit like an LS does. But it's still a badass motor. It's a great motor, but it's physically big. So we sandwiched that in there and sandwiched the 6-speed and some, I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to transfer cases, but some twin stick mm-hmm. badass transfer case put in it. And I had Mike Curtis, who does all my wheels. Mike's uber talented.
Yeah.
He's been doing years for me now for 15, 20 years since he left Boys probably. And I had him do a hubcap, a Ford Bronco hubcap turned into a larger wheel so we put larger tires on it. Mm-hmm. And it was badass. And he's selling the crap out of them, which is good for him. You know, and he does me a favor. If he builds me a wheel, he won't sell. He'll give me a little bit of time to call it mine for a while. And
yeah.
Then he'll start mass producing it and getting out of it, which is, you know, good for him. Make a dollar. I'm happy for you, Mike. You know? Yeah. So that was our Bronco stage, our first Bronco we did. And that was probably 10 years ago. And since then, we've probably done 5 or 6 more of this Coyote Broncos. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Blazers are hot now, and they're hot. And,
so those Broncos, you just like, you started doing that. That was before. Now there's Bronco aftermarket chassis that people can buy. Yeah. But when you first did them, first couple, there wasn't anything like that. Yeah. I'm not a big, I mean, I have a 4-wheel drive, but I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not a big 4-wheel drive. You know, I don't build 4-wheel drive stuff. So that's a whole different thought process to learn all that transfer case stuff and all that. If I have a 4-wheel drive question, I just call our buddy Ian. So.
Right. He knows way more about that stuff, you know, than we do. But if I was, I'm not saying more intelligent, more motivated by the dollar, let's just put it that way, I would build a gazillion Broncos and knock them out, because right now there's an ask for that seat all day long.
Yep.
And I get off on doing one-of-a-kind stuff and then move on to the next thing.
Yeah. So I want to do the same thing. Yeah.
Right. So we did the first Bronco, and I appreciate all the Bronco guys. We did Broncos forever, but the first one was the one special. It sits in your heart. All right, cool. Mm-hmm. You know, we do the first set of wheels that, you know, and Michael's done a gazillion, I don't remember that. Multiple wheels for us, or one-off wheels, or laying the windshield back in that Firebird, or you know, even the Continental deal with the whole thing. I want to do it one time. Yeah. Be the first to do it. Okay, let's move on. So what can we do next now?
So talking about Mike Curtis and the wheels, what first car did he build the fake white wall? You've done their, they look like a white wall from a distance, and you machine them. I mean, people have done them. Ken Diggs done it, but I kind of think you were one of the first guys that I remember that got press in the magazines that they did that. I'm sure maybe somebody else did, but but you were at the early of that. That you, from a distance here, lead sleds, they like white walls and not 20-inch wheels and stuff like that. But you were putting 18 and 20-inch wheels with a machine white wall and then a low profile tire and a certain tire brand because of the no side lip and all that stuff. I kind of remember. But what was the first car that Mikey Curtis did the machine sidewall wheel?
So that the first one to come out. Let me clarify. So Mike builds our wheels, and I come up with the idea, and Mike and I talk like you and I talk and bullshit. I don't know anything about running a CNC and how you cut a wheel. So I give the idea to Mike, and Mike runs with it. So I would like to take the credit for it, but I take the credit for the idea, and Mike runs with it and actually makes the stuff.
Mm-hmm. So that's what he's good at. You got an idea, he'll let you know, I can or can't, and figure it out. I stopped by a shop this year when I went out to the roadster show. That was the first time I've been, and it's impressive. Even like, I go, what's the stuff on this shelf? Oh, that's just stuff that is junk, or we change our mind. And just the junk shelf is like, it's the coolest shit I've ever seen.
It is. Other people have taken credit for doing that wheel first, or coming up with it. If I was going to lay money on it, my guess is that Mike
machined the first one. Whoever.
Yes,
yeah.
Period. So we're talking about the root beer flow car going to Detroit and hopefully get a grade 8 or whatever with it. And we described this wheel to Mike, and it's a 20-inch wheel. So
the root beer float had that wheel on it?
Yeah, the root beer
float. Okay, wow. Okay.
So that's how long ago.
Yeah.
And some people have taken credit for that afterwards, which I have pictures of it designed. So that was actually a 20-inch wheel. But if you look at that wheel, it looks like a 15-inch factory, 53-inch wheel. But why do we put a 20-inch wheel on? All right, good question, Tim. We put that 20-inch wheel because we have giant disc brakes behind it. We have wheel with six-piston brakes. Well, they can't fit behind a 15-inch wheel.
Yeah. You've updated the suspension and the drivability and all that. You make a modern hot rod. Yeah.
We want the drivability and comfortness of the big brakes. We want the horsepower behind it. And for that, we got a horsepower to be able to blow that 4,000 pounds up somehow, and that requires big brakes. Well, big brakes requires a bigger wheel. I did not want a hoopty-looking ability wheel in there, if you will. So I want it to look like classy, like a Cadillac. So Mike and I hashed that out over several phone calls and quick math here. So if you have a 20-inch wheel, so and, you know, to get a 20-inch wheel and a 15 is a normal wheel in a car, correct?
Probably a 15 or a 16, maybe. Yeah. Some of the cars have 16s, well, didn't they? Yeah.
But let's just assume it's a 15. And a white wall is 2.5 inches. I'd love to have 3 inches on a white wall, which we fudged a little bit on that. Mm-hmm. So we can fudge that. So if you have a 15-inch wheel, 2.5 inches on each side is a 20-inch.
Uh-huh.
That's how I come up with 20s. So we can do 18s, but we did Corvette wheels with 18s that did the red and the black stripes in them.
Mm, okay.
So we need at least 20 inches to get a factory-looking
white wall
wheel.
Yeah.
So which would give us 2.5 inches.
A traditional-ish looking white wall.
Yes. Yeah. So then we can fudge that and actually make the center like 14 3/4 inches and get like 2 3/4 inches on each side, if you will. And
so that car you think was 12 years ago you built that. You did the machine sidewall tire thing.
I would say that was, I had been 12, 13.
I came in, 12. Because I came and helped on that. I was living in Tennessee, and I've been there 12 years. I think it's been 11 or 12 years since you did that car.
So that would have been the first car that was what. Then afterwards, that got big for the next couple of years. It's kind of tanged down a little bit now. And, you know, we do it in like a flat white.
Mm-hmm.
The white wall isn't white. The white's so not white.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, but that's what makes it look more realistic.
It's almost ivory-ish.
Yeah. It has a yellow tint to it, and you can't have it shiny.
I didn't remember which car was the first, but I remember standing next to the one, and you're like, that's machine sidewall. And it's not machine, because you even got the little diamonds and the stuff that would have been on the white walls raised up, and it's like, I call bullshit. And you're like, touch it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the first time you told me that.
People still didn't get that. You know, Big Al is in the car world, Al Liebman.
Yeah.
I remember going to Detroit, and he said, no, that's a 15. I said, stick your hand behind it. And he reached behind it, and now the wheel feels like it grew from behind.
Yeah.
And he's trying to process that, and he gets this weird look in his face.
Like a funhouse mirror or something like that.
Like it's a 15 and 20-inch wheel combined or something.
He's thinking the wheel split. And how'd you get the tire with the split? Yeah.
People didn't, you know, and but I would love to take credit for that, but I'll take credit for some of the idea, but the majority of that was Mike. And I feel Mike was the first to do that. And he's so creative. And, you know, and that was one idea that I came up with that actually worked. But we've talked about multiple things, and he thinks I'm a dumbass.
He'll tell you if you're not.
He's like, I can't do that. You crazy? Or that's a bad idea. Or, you know, a real friend will tell you that, though.
Yeah.
And you and I had conversations over things, and we discussed cars, et cetera. And I said, nah, not that, Tim. That's not, you know. But a real friend will tell you that instead of just leaving you go and doing stupid things. So
okay, we're to the wheels. And then you build a couple more caddies. You got one of the caddies here this weekend.
Yes.
That's been here in town for a while. It's at the Garage Museum here in Salina, Kansas.
Is that a cool place or what?
I haven't been there yet, dude. I'm going with you tomorrow. Get your car out. Or Sunday I'm going to go with you.
I'll get you in.
Yeah. You've been trying to get me to bring my 54 down. I'll have to do that. I need to do a little touch-up, get the air ride working.
Well, that 54, to me, is an iconic Tim car, you know.
I appreciate that.
It does not mean it's the best or the best car, just like some of the cars we talked about mine. Yeah. But that's the car I relate to, Tim.
Yeah.
You know, and just
and that
like
car was built, first time it was in a magazine, was 1993. The body mods were all done, and it was a Pro Street car. And then it's been over 20 years since you redid it like it looks now with the 20s and 22s. And now I won't probably ever do a car with 22s on. I don't know if you could pay me to put 22s on a car anymore.
Yeah.
But
Let's add white walls.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyhow, the garage, they have a custom car garage over there. The garage is half the garage is dedicated to customs.
Yeah, and KKOA. The KKOA Hall of Fame stuff's on the wall in there, and they have a little listing of the people that are inducted, so they got some of that stuff.
Right.
Pretty cool. And then it's split. It's like customs on one side and normal classics on the other side. And I've seen a lot of pictures, and it's a great, great museum, isn't it?
They moved it. It is. The people running that, Michelle and Matt, and they're great people, and they love their job. I don't know how you get a job doing that, but I'd love to do that.
And they have a lot of like interactive stuff for the kids and stuff too, don't they?
They do. So back to the cars. One side stays nothing but customs all the time. And then they move them out, and like people bring different customs in, whether it's the new age customs like, you know, our friend Eddie did, or older customs or traditional customs or wild customs, or, you know, the stuff that Elton might have done or Gary Myers has done lately, the wild stuff. That stays all custom. The other side goes from original cars, where it might be original Corvettes or Bentleys,
Mylays,
yeah, whatever it is. But they change that out frequently too. They had trucks in there, they had service vehicles in there, and they have so that keeps moving and morphing.
You're passing through Salina, you want to stop every year because there's different cars to look at. Yeah. Right.
And then they have educational things there for kids or adults. They have a seatbelt simulator where you get in a car and ish type thing, and they simulate how a seatbelt works. They have computerized spray painting in there. You can spray paint a door, a 3D spray a door. Computerized welding in there for the kids to learn that stuff. So hopefully that's putting a bug in one of the youngsters' ears to maybe I would like to learn a trade and do this instead of, you know, going down another path. And you can always rely on your education.
And
I'm not going to knock education whatsoever. Always rely on education. But, you know, there are trades to be learned that we need to teach the youngsters.
There's a shortage of trades people. Doesn't matter if you're a plumber or electrician or whatever, that's a good business to go into anymore. But you kind of help get cars lined up for that. So are you on the board there?
I am on the board. I'm on the board of directors there. This year I became on the board of directors.
So if you've got a badass custom and you want to have it on display for people to see for no more than a year, do 6 months, a year, or something like that.
Well,
contact you, and you can maybe see if you can get them in the museum. You can have the car display. They really need some good customs.
I would be happy to do that. Yeah. And it's a great place to keep your car there. Very well, very good at taking care of your car, making sure it's clean and detailed. It's roped off. You'll have 60 gazillion fingers all over it. And you know, if we're talking about children earlier, the children aren't going to be climbing through it. It's very well taken care of, and the people there take care of your car. Mm-hmm. It's insured while it's there. So yes, if you have a badass customer, let me reframe it. It does not have to be bad. I mean, any car represents a true custom.
Mm-hmm.
We would love to have there, you know? So we're not looking for a Riddler winner, just some 777 winner. No, as long as it's a custom.
Those are welcome too, but
yes, we'll take them.
Yeah.
But, get a hold of myself or Michelle or Matt there at the museum. And I'd love to talk to you about
that. They got social media. It's just called the Garage or Garage Museum or something.
Correct.
In Salina, Kansas. Yeah. So.
Killer facility.
Yeah. Okay, so back on cars.
All right.
So that car, it's been in the museum. You built that a while ago.
Yes.
The gold Caddy, the Golden Empress. The
Golden Empress, yes.
It's kind of got a cool story, the intake. So tell a story about the intake on that car.
I'm not sure I can share it, but I'll give you the condensed version of that, okay?
Yeah.
So it's a traditional custom. It's a 49 convertible. I had a 48, and I was married at the time.
It's got real white walls on it, not machined white walls, right?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had the 48 car, which I had for years and years and years, and drove it, and I sold that, and I was married to Laura at the time, and she got upset I sold her car.
Yeah, I remember.
She was pissed. She was more than upset. So anyhow, I said, well, I'm going to build me another Cadillac, you know, because I miss driving it, and I'm going to appease her and build me another Cadillac and take care of it. But I wanted something a little more traditional. So we have a 331 Caddy in there. Of course, overdrive transmission. It's got real white walls. 56 Olds headlights on it. The quarters are welded on, molded on. The rockers are dropped. And a couple of little body mods. It's not super wild car by any means, you know, but it has that look to it, if you will. And the intake. So I'm trying to avoid it, but here we go.
I'm good for those questions.
So I wanted the traditional. So that's the 331.
He probably won't listen to this. So
the 331 in that car, which back in the day, Cadillac was the baddest motor. That was the hotter motor to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a step above, you know, someone's going to disagree with this, the flatheads, et cetera. But they used that for tanks in the Army and pumps in the Army. The 331 was a badass motor at the time. So I found that, and then I wanted a cool intake to put on. So do you, you know, I'm going to use 70-year-old technology and put Strombergs on. I already decided that. Because, you know, fuel injection's not good enough for me. This is not one of my brighter moments, but I just like the look of the Strombergs, mm-hmm. I feel. So then you want 2, 3, or 4 Strombergs. So then I ran to this mutual friend of ours, Tim. It has this badass intake from Jop Horn. Now, Jop Horn in the day was building intakes and kicking Ween and Kreger's butts drag racing. They were drag racing. And so they couldn't beat him at the day. And Jop Horn was a nobody. This is like John Doe building intakes to trying to compete with Edelbrock. You know, it just doesn't happen. But Jop Horn at that time was. And so Kreger couldn't beat him, so they said, we'll buy him out. So Kreger bought Jop Horn out. And then they reproduced the same intake with no name on it for a while, and then went to the Kreger name put on it. But when Jop Horn went to Kreger after they bought him out, he got involved with the wheel department at Kreger. And he developed one of the baddest wheels ever, the Kreger SS. Now, everybody drives a hot rod. Or,
yeah.
I would think.
Everybody knows what a Kreger is.
Kreger SS is, you know.
Yeah. Never had Kregers, your dad, your uncle, your grandpa, somebody had Kregers in if you're a hot rod fan.
You're damn right. So that's a Jop Horn wheel. So anyhow, long story short, a friend of mine and Timmy's had this intake, and it came off of an iconic TV car back in the day. And he didn't know if he wanted to sell it to me. And I'm still not sure if I own that intake or not.
Might be like a museum. It's on loan, maybe? I don't really know.
So when Mark, I bought off of Mark. If I ever sold the car, I told Mark I'd take the intake off and sell it back to him. Mm-hmm. I couldn't sell the intake unless I gave it back to him, sold it back to him or not. So I handed Mark money, and I currently have the intake on one of my cars. I'm not really sure I own it. But it's still a badass intake.
You're a caretaker of the piece, the iconic history piece.
Yes. Yeah. And
so some of these names have been changed to protect the innocent. I don't know. We never really said full names, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah. So. So that's the quick edited version. Yeah,
I like little stories of cars like that. How you found this piece or how you found this piece. And I put this piece on because of that. I like stories like that too.
I do too. But you know, the guys that were building hot rod pieces back then were nobodies, you know, and somebody like Jop Horn to build that badass intake, which kicking everybody's butt and doing the Kreger S wheel, which everybody in the world, hot rod world knows that wheel. That's
place in history right there.
You know, and I walk by that car, and I love the car and whole, but I walk by that car, and I see that gold candy motor sticking out of the hood with those Edelbrock or the Stromberg intake or carburetor sitting out there. And
those are four Strombergs?
Four Strombergs, yeah. You know, it's not a common plenum either. It's a badass intake, and I'm thrilled to maybe own it or not. I'm not really sure if I do or not.
Yeah, but it's still on the car at this point. Yeah, allegedly. Okay, so in the middle of that time, in them time frames, there was some guy that had a TV show that had you come to be on the TV show. You came on my show, Search and Restore, because you brought the brown car, the first one, and drove it around to lunch. I remember going to the Italian place, and you had a carload of Tommy was with you and everybody.
Yeah.
And so you were on, which episode were you on first? Which car did you come on?
The truck, I believe.
Which truck? The street rod truck or the four-wheel drive truck?
Street rod truck. The AD truck, I think. Green and...
The 48 Ford? Okay, yeah, you came on that.
Yeah.
So you didn't come season one, you came season two, and you came on three builds of season two, though, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you were on the green truck.
I did the Hudson.
And then you were on the Hudson because we were in the paint booth. We sprayed it and we laid graphics. You pretty much laid all the stripes, the Jimmy Smith rendering. And then you came back on the last one, the Mopar build, too, didn't you?
I was coming back on the Mopar build, and I had to take care of my own business, so I never did make it back to that. But I was there. I'm not really sure. I would think multiple times, in, I don't know, 4 or 5 times.
Yeah. And then you got, so even after my show was done and I left, you still did stuff for Tommy on Muscle Car.
Right.
Did some paint job, a couple paint jobs, didn't you? And then it came to your shop and we did some press.
We did several things on Muscle Car, Detroit Muscle, and we maintained a relationship with... John there, and we did stuff on Power Nation with Courtney, and I can't remember the other lady there. I can remember her name.
And back then, you'd come in, they had the Power Block and
the Power
Block Nation, and then the girls
so would with her.
Yeah, so you'd bring cars in and get interviewed on there too. So
and then we did stuff at my shop. They it came down about the film crew and everybody down in South Carolina. We did stuff there. We
did a purple Mopar.
Yeah, we did the Challenger, the giveaway Challenger. That was for Tommy's show at that time.
Yeah,
we filmed that down there, and you know, I think the people. I hope those days are still alive, but at the time, I enjoyed going there on Search and Restore with talented people and knocking out cool stuff.
Yeah, I'm lucky to be in this industry a long time. I know a lot of people. I know who isn't drama, and that's what we didn't have time for. So
yeah.
It was an awesome experience. I still can't believe that some of these guys that, you know, some like you, I was close friends with. And, yeah. You know, I didn't know Jason Anderson before then. Mank brought him in there. And, you know, different guys that I met. But these guys would come and be on the show and work their butts off for the show, you know, TV exposure. But because I called them.
Yeah.
You know, Rob Ida came and, you know, Ray Bartlett came to different shows. And there's just, man, we had Ted Dabowski and guys from all these top shops would come to be on the show. Yeah, they're getting exposure and get to, you know, plug themselves. But it was just, it was a no drama. We worked our butts off. It was just a cool experience to do that. It was like, it was a give back show, you know.
It was neat. Yeah. I believe you should be very proud of that. I believe there are very few guys who can pull it off today. They have the friends in the industry that have the talent to do what we did and 4 weeks there. And we're talking chassis and frame and motor swaps and body mods and paint and finishing the car in really 4 weeks.
Yeah, and then if they couldn't sell the ad and get the parts donated, I had to call my buddies in the industry, get wheels, tires, chassis, body parts. I had to get all that stuff, paint donated, because there wasn't big budgets on that. Even though it was a TV show, there wasn't like, hey, we got $200,000 to buy parts for this, so I had to pull in favors, man.
Contrary to what some people watch on TV, everything on TV, especially the car industry, is not real.
Yeah.
You know, they're TV cars, if you will. They're not built in 7 days to function.
Yeah, we built them in 4 weeks. We did ours.
But real cars.
I kept them for a couple weeks after and finished them and stuff, you know. But yeah. We had to drive them out of the building on Friday of week four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that truck, I think Billy Gibbons came.
Yeah, that's when I thought I was going to kill Billy Gibbons, because it wasn't ready. We drove it to the corner of the block and back, and we got Billy Gibbons to come in through Chris Robinson.
The stereo guy
got it all lined up, and it's just Nashville connections. And remember the TV owners, the studio owners, well, what do we need this rock and roll guy in there? It's like, you have no idea who Billy Gibbons is and how big he is in the industry, and Godzilla, and you know, the ZZ Top Car before
not,
that.
In the car industry, not just the music industry.
Yeah, he's big. And so we got him in. That was really cool, getting to film with Billy and walking around and talking. And actually got in trouble because we were talking about car. He probably did research on me, but made me feel good because he was talking about a couple cars that he remembered, the Copper Buick, you know, because he likes customs. And I remember the producers, you're getting off course. I said, man, just let us talk. Edit this. So me and Billy talked for 45 minutes, walked around this car. Then they got a big hair. Hey, you guys are going to drive this. We're going to GoPro up. The camera's in there. And I'm like, okay, guys, check the wheel lug nuts. You know, make sure the cotter pins are in the tie rods. Because we seriously not even drove it a half mile.
Yeah.
So we put all these cameras in there. And me in the passenger seat, Billy Gibbons is driving this green and black 48 Ford truck. It was a bitching truck. Fat man chassis. Mm-hmm. Ford great motor. Carburetors. It was a hot rod. Artillery wheels. Bitch, I love that truck, man. Drove so good. And so we go on this, like, 8-mile loop through this neighborhood. And this whole time, I'm just sweating. And, you know, it made the show.
Everything works like it should.
Yeah, and it didn't overheat. It made it back. I'm thinking, man, the wheels are going to fall off. I'm going to kill Billy Gibbons, you know. But, yeah, it was a pretty cool experience of doing that. And you got to film with Mario Andretti on the show, a bunch of NASCAR drivers and Hollywood guys and stuff like that. But, yeah, that was.
I had some great experiences. I really did. I met some great car builders. And, you know, even the camera people, and I might have the wrong terminology here, so excuse me. Producers, whatever. I've had taken cars there, and they went filming going down the road, and I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to do that. Tim, my shit breaks.
Everything breaks.
Especially in this new build. Yeah. Okay, here you are. Nobody builds a car and takes it out of the shop the first time. Doesn't have a squeak, rattle, or something loose, or something.
That was one of the struggle of doing automotive TV. I was actually technical co-producer. Of them not understanding, because they're TV people. They do a very good job TV. I couldn't do their job. But they couldn't understand what do you mean? I'm not, the car drove out the building, went to the corner of the block. You don't, like some of them cars, remember me and Tommy took Chad Terrar's wagon for the first drive because we needed to film the drive. Yeah. Down the interstate, 70 mile an hour. It had not even a mile on it. And Tommy's like, your butt puckered? Yes, it is. And it drove so good from the start. There's a couple little tweaks in it. The fuel injection ran good. And Tommy's like, dude, I would drive this thing across country. And
But that's not real life. When we start and build a car from let's just say, the frame up, and we disassemble every nut and bolt. And we have unknowns from manufacturers on there that we don't have control of, Tim. Whether I don't care whatever part it is. So we have every nut and bolt off the car, the frame, the chassis, the driveline setup, the motor, the transmission, the brakes, the steering. There's too many things to go wrong when every nut and bolt's out of it. And we don't have control over every nut and bolt.
Yeah, I had a customer once that fresh build. He's sitting in line, which will test your car almost, and then driving it down the interstate at a good guy's award ceremony. Creeping, moving, getting hot.
It's getting hot.
And I kept walking back to him, and I'm like, everything cool? Okay, is it overheating? And he goes, what could go wrong? It's all new. I go, you don't want to know. Just stay in your happy little world. You have no idea.
So I just went through that. I built a truck, 50 Chevy truck. This is a cool story. It's not a badass hot rod. It's not a badass customer, which it was, but this is a cool people story. So this guy is retiring. He's from Columbia, South Carolina, which is somewhat close to me, like an hour from me. So it's great to work for a guy that's close to me because most of our customers are from out of state, et cetera. And he had this old Chevy truck, a 50 Chevy truck, and it was a piece of junk. And he wanted to redo that for when he retired. Their plan is to drive around the country to state parks and federal parks and take pictures of birds and flowers. That's what they wanted his hot rod for. So we went and we got a chassis. Chassis manufacturers are all backed up, so good for them. They're great. So Spraker did us a chassis for this truck. Chassis, a brand new bed, and it's still a 70-year-old truck. Every nut and bolt's been a part of that truck now. We assembled this truck. And so we built a nice, average hot rod truck.
Nice driver.
LS3, 4L65, 9-4 Spraker chassis, a new bed on it, nice body parts, nice finish nicely, et cetera. So we get the truck all done for him, and the interior guy has a nice chair, and he has like 200 miles on it. And he drives it around his development time, and he loses his gas pedal. No gas pedal. It fired up and just idle, won't go anywhere.
Was it drive-by-wire?
It's drive-by-wire, yeah. It's L3, so it's all drive-by-wire. So he called me up, and he says he left it sit for 50 minutes, and it started up again, and he drove it home. Oh, all right, cool. So there's still something. These things do not fix themselves.
No.
And something's wrong with it, period. He drives again, happens again. I said, oh, great. So I go down and pick the truck up from a super nice guy. Joe Gilfus is his name. Him and his wife are awesome people and very understanding. And I try to tell him, you're close. Take your truck. There's, maybe 100 miles on since we built the truck. You're close enough. If you have issues, see, here, rattles, rake, shakes, whatever, something done, just call me. I'll come down, pick it up since we're close, and I'll take care of it. So long story short, I picked the truck up. And apparently he has large feet, too, size 13, and the steering column in that, the interior guy wrapped it with some panel, if you will, and put a piece in there, and he must have got the pedal wiring wrapped up in there, so he must have bumped it with his foot, so the gas pedal wiring, there's no cable anymore, right, it's all drive-by-wire, was just sitting in there loose, shaking back and forth, so every time we get in the truck and bumped it with his foot, it wouldn't start, no gas pedal. Not like a schmuck because the guy has no gas pedal in his truck. But, it could have been an interior guy. It could have been the guy's fault with his big foot or whatever. But,
so all you had to do was click it on?
I guess. I did move the wiring out of the way of this thing. But, but it was something simply stupid that,
That's good. It was an easy fix, though. Right. Yeah, that's little things that happen like that that
we don't have control over.
Yeah, I listen to the Roadster Shop guys, the Oil and Whiskey podcast is very good. And they talk about, Jeremy talks about that, they build a lot of drivers and stuff, but, nice stuff. And they put a lot of effort into their chassis and drivability to make everything better. And he's like, there's always something that's going to go wrong. You have to shake them out. You got, we put so many miles on them and it still could break. And, that's just the nature of the game.
If they plan on driving their car, if you're going to show a car, it's easy. We can build you a show car. It doesn't have to stop. It doesn't turn. The air conditioning doesn't have to work. The radio doesn't have to work correctly. As long as it runs enough to get in and out of the show arena, so what? That's all we need. But driving a car, having a drivable car that still looks badass, that's tough to get. Yeah.
Not just drive, but some of these guys, they do these group road tours and stuff from, good guys does them, and Bear Jackson does them and stuff, and Cars and Cones does them and all of that. And that, because allegedly, some of them drive like assholes on the road. It's not like, hey, we're going 60 and 70 all day long. Allegedly, I know a guy that he pulled over on one of the FM3, my wife's group's Cars and Cones trip, driving an IROC. And it's the guy that just, I'm not going to say his name. I don't want to get him in trouble, but everybody knows him. He's a crazy guy anyway, fun to be around. He's the guy that was the company that bought the Caddy convertible.
Yeah.
And he's pulled over, so everybody kind of circled around and caught back up. We were coming up the end and driving a panel truck. We weren't driving like idiots, allegedly. And he's alongside the road. I was like, well, what's the matter? By the time we get looped around, he's getting back in the car. And he goes, oh, it thawed out. What do you mean it thawed out? He goes, it got really cold. The throttle body iced up and froze and locked the throttle body up because I was going well over 130, 40 mile an hour with the nitrous on. Because he was getting ready to run it at the Texas mile, on the freeway, on the country highways, allegedly. And it froze up and had to thaw out. And he's like, yeah, I guess I can't stay on the nitrous that long.
That guy's a nut. So, all right. You said something about a license. I have a driver's license story. It has something to do with cars and hot rods. So
I knew we'd get sidetracked a lot with me and you talking. But yeah.
Well, this is car related. It is hot rod related. Had to go renew my driver's license. So I just thought, I'll go to the DMV in South Carolina. And I'll, you know, sign my name, fill out paperwork, and get my picture taken again. They'll give me a brand new license, right? This was just last week, too, by the way.
Yeah.
So that's not how it went. So I go there, and the lady looks up at me after I fill out the paperwork, and I get my number, you know, just like I'm at the damn deli or something. Give me a number, and I sit there, and they call me up, and, you know, number, whatever, blah, 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 26. All right, so I go up there and talk to her. She says, you're going to have to take a test. I said, what?
What?
That's it. That's the look I had in my face. So I'm not prepared to take no test or anything. You know, things change over the years. So I said, what are you talking about? She goes, you have too many points on your license. So apparently speeding and points does not just affect your insurance.
Did you pass the test?
Well, the first time, no. So me, again.
Did you ever come back another day?
I thought at one time I was intelligent. I'm not so sure anymore what happened.
Did you let you retake or just come back the next day?
So I took it that day. I'm like, well, heck, it can't be that difficult. I've been driving for like 4 years, you know? It can't be that difficult. So now they're asking questions, which you and I don't know the answer to, but the way they word it, you know, the color of signs for warning signs and the color of this sign and the shape of this. I'm like,
okay, here's a question.
I don't remember this shit.
What's the three colors on the stoplight?
Red, yellow, green.
Carrie?
In that order.
She will fight. That middle one's orange. She refuses that it's yellow. It's orange to her.
Where are you from again?
Illinois.
Yeah, I'm living differently there.
No, it's just her. It's just her, trust me.
Anybody listening to this that agrees to me, it is orange.
So that was part of the test, too. It was, what order they had? Red, yellow, green. The order of the lights and stuff. So, and you think you could pass, right? Which I, oh, shit, just give me the test now. I'm sticking right now.
Yeah,
I didn't make it.
I mean, how much did you miss it by?
I missed it by a question.
Oh, that's not bad.
So there's 30 questions, and you have to get 80%.
Yeah.
And you can't skip all.
So you got like a 75% or something like that.
Right.
But
that's a son of a bitch. So the lady was laughing at me. I mean, the lady was there. I mean, she doesn't have to do this shit, too. You know? Uh-huh. She goes, well, don't you know how much that's? No, I just give a test. I'm like, what's going to happen? I can fail and come back and do it, right? So I failed. I had to go back and take the test. Again.
Did I go back another day?
I went back. You can only do it once a day. I said, just give me the test again. No, we can't do this, sir. So
I'm going to drive home on my expired license and come back in tomorrow.
Right? Well, it expires on your birthday, so it didn't actually expire yet. So I'm still good for a while. So I actually went home and got online and looked at material.
Studied a little bit?
Yeah, because there's things. I really thought I was somewhat intelligent, a decent driver.
Oh, we've taken driver's ed so long ago that you kind of.
But knowing the shape and the color of signs, and knowing we're talking about the red, yellow, green, one order from top to bottom, and how many feet to do this and how many feet to do that.
Yeah.
And
I'd fail.
I'd probably fail too, yeah.
I did.
So no, don't get points on your license so you don't have to get
that's true.
Right?
Well, see, there's things you have to weigh out. It was probably worth the speed and adrenaline rush to take the test again. So I'm probably not even able to speed and adrenaline rush to driving a fast-ass car.
Yeah.
I'm stuck doing that. It's like building customs and hot rods. Yeah. That's like, well, Chris, if you have customs and hot rods, you want to take your test again? Well, yeah, I'm not going to do that either. So,
yeah.
But, you know, but I could tell that lady there was laughing her ass off. She looked at me like, you know, I walk in there with a Ryan's Rod and customer shirt, and I can't even pass the driver's test. How'd that go?
I build them. I don't drive them for a living. Yeah. Okay, so let's. We've been over an hour here so far. We still got some stuff we need to touch on. The last big car you built for yourself was all over. It was a Riddler Grade 8. You won. Let's look at your arm tattoos. You won. Yeah. You won the 777, which is what they call America's Top Custom Award here at Salina for custom guys. That's a big, big award to win the 777 here at Salina. You won the Winfield Award.
I did win the Winfield Award, New York,
at Syracuse. You did not win the Tulsa show, did you? That year, the Riddler 57 showed up. You didn't win the 10 grand at Tulsa. Yeah, that was a tough year that year, man. That was tough.
That was a tough year, and the same car that beat me in Detroit beat me there.
Oh, okay.
And it was deserved. It was deserved. He should have won. However.
That car was in Wheel Hub. It was in, what magazines was that thing in? And it was in PPG ads. It was in Ron Francis Wiring ads.
Yeah, it was in Street. It was on the cover of Street Rodder. It was on the cover of Wheel Hub and PPG. Ron Francis used it. I didn't use it.
So you went almost 2-3 years probably. You couldn't pick up a magazine that thing wasn't in event coverage, a feature, or an ad for someplace. I'd say almost 3 years that. It's probably still being ran in some stuff, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, some companies are still using it for the advertisement, which, you know, if it's doing them well, good, keep using it. I don't care.
Candy Red, 56 Continental. What was the motor in it? Is a Coyote in it?
Ford Racing Coyote, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, but we, tried to change the look of it, and Dan Baker, our friend Dan from Alumincraft, did the valve cover and a bunch of metal work done under the hood, and tried to take the Coyote look off of it, if you will. You know,
trunk had like a guitar amp in it.
It did. It had a we took a Fender amplifier and cut it up and covered an air ride in there with that in, and we had a Stratocaster I painted to match the car doing that, and Chuck Hanna did interior and had a waterfall console, and you know, I love the T-Bird seats in there. The T-Bird seats is a great killer seat to me, and we can modify them to fit whatever. We got rid of the back seat, and the dash itself was an Astrodome dash from Chrysler, and we took it from over the top to center the steering column and put it in the middle so it protruded out, and that's a killer dash. And those cars, and the 61 Plymouth, Dennis Crooks cast the steering wheel for me, 61 Plymouth steering wheel, so it's not actually round, which I thought looked killer, but did you ever drive a car without a round steering wheel?
I don't think I did. I don't think I have.
To return on center, just let go of the wheel and it turns. If it's square, it doesn't.
Really?
Yeah, because your head gets in the way.
Oh, okay.
And then, of course, you know, Mike did my wheels for me again on that.
Machine sidewall wheels.
Well, with white wall and with 20-inch wheels on it, and big wheel with brakes under it, and four bar. And then the frame, our friends at Batman helped me with the frame on that somewhat, and bed rails. And this car, I wanted to sit on the ground, so the rockers had laid on ground. So I guess I did not have, I just went brain did, what's it's chassis, roaster shop chassis brains like they do. So I took the frame rails, I laid them on the ground, set the motor on the ground, and built the car around that, because that's how I wanted to sit. So that sounds overly simple, right? But if you want to build a car to lay on the ground, we'll start the frame on the ground, put the rockers on the ground, put the motor in. Now we got to make sure the motor doesn't stick out of the hood. We want everything to flow and look right, because the customers, the flow and how things look and the compliments are so important on those cars. And so that's how we started building the car.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to put a hood scoop on it like I built for the Chevelle, because that just wouldn't look right on custom.
No, not a custom. Everything has to flow. You know, right down to the bumpers. You know, we took the bumpers, and the bumpers were multiple pieces, and the bottom halves, we welded them to the car and made them no longer part of the bumper and painted them body color. So the bumper itself, the chrome part, looks like it's floating in there. We extended the rear rockers on that car, and it's chopped 2 inches and took 3/4 inch out of the hat of the car and dropped it down.
And the fake tire bubbles removed off the trunk, right, too.
Yeah, that trunk was basically built from scratch. So what would have been the spare tire-ish area on there originally is now gone. Mm-hmm. And I understand the reason for that, the Ford had behind that, but it did not do anything but screw up the lines of the car in my eye.
They're a beautiful car from stock, but
yeah,
you definitely improved it. And you know, I'm a fan of custom stuff, and you've built a lot of cool cars, but that car... In 30 years, custom people, I think, are going to remember that car. That car is really, it's a modern build, but it's an iconic I put it up there with anything. I really do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I wanted to build that car. I'm sure to pay homage or to simulate what the guys did 40 or 50 years ago before us, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want to look modern custom, although I wanted modern features of fuel injection and brakes and drivetrain and that kind of stuff. But I wanted to look old. Thus, I wanted the look of the white wall tires.
Not everybody can pull off that mix of the old and new, but you nailed it on that one.
Thank you. Really did.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to keep evolving.
And I'm getting the motor that was originally out of that for one of my Mercury projects coming out. Yeah.
You know the best part of that motor? The valve covers.
Yeah.
That 56 Continental had the baddest valve covers on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's sitting outside my shop right now. So I did sell that motor one time, and Tim showed interest in that motor. And so I went and I bought it back and picked it up for Tim. And every time I walk by, I eyeball those valve covers.
Yeah, I want the whole motor, the whole drivetrain in my Mercury.
So what's sitting there waiting for whenever you're ready?
I need to make a trip over.
That'd probably be done about when my car's done, my other car's done, right?
Yeah. Okay, so you did the Continental. Meanwhile,
we're building customer cars too.
Yeah, you took. So how many years ago did you take the Mustang? You took a Mustang to SEMA. Was it last 2 years ago?
Or? 2 years ago. Last year we took
the Vet.
The Vet and the Trans Am there.
Oh, yeah, forgot about the Vet, the Trans Am too.
Well, thank you.
You did a split T-top Trans Am for yourself. There was a finalist for Muscle Machine of the Year. Good guys. Again, machine Mikey Curtis wheels, but kind of have that original look, the honeycomb wheel and LS.
Yeah.
And a red interior, beautiful car. Also on wheel hub. And
it's on wheel hub and street rods as well.
So you're a custom guy, but you also like hot rods too. So yeah, the Trans Am, I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen it, but it was in a lot of magazines too.
Flush mount glass from Fessler and some body mods. So it was a pro touring hot rodish car that had custom touches that, unless you're a Trans Am guy, you might not pick up on.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like we narrowed the front rear bumpers, we dropped the quarters in the rear, dropped the rocker panels, changed the window openings on it, and flushed on the
glass. Custom.
It's a custom.
Not in KKOA standards, but a modern custom, almost like Jerry would call a NCC, a new concept custom. Almost.
Right?
Yeah.
But we have to keep evolving. We can't keep doing, and please don't take this wrong way, we can't keep doing 32s or Tri-5 Chevys or first-gen Camaros. I love them. They're all great to me, make a living doing what I'm doing. We have to evolve and keep moving forward. So now I think we're, you know, when the second-gen Camaros come out, people didn't like them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that got accepted. Now we're moving to the later second-gen stuff, and even the 80 stuff.
Third-gens, a lot of third-gen stuff. I see a lot of them on the autocross, but you've also got a fetish for that. What, do you got two IROCs right now?
I do. I couldn't have one as a kid, but now I've got me two IROCs. And in my
mind, original paint. Kind of really green puff cars, aren't they?
I have a yellow with 20-some thousand miles on it, original paint car, and I have a blue G92 with 50,000 miles on it. And the reason I had them is because I won one when I was a kid. I couldn't have that. They were out of reach. I mean, they were rich dudes had them. Rich kids had them. You know, I wasn't.
Now the prices are coming. You got in right on those. You got them before the prices started getting stupid.
You know,
third gens are coming up.
They're getting hot. They're 30, 35 grand now for this car.
So, yeah.
You know, and I paid half that for it. And in my mind, though, they were a badass car. They were a super badass car. They were wicked fast and handled great. They just did everything right until I drove one.
I almost bought a third gen, a purple one, a lower level one with the gray cloth, but the nicer wheels. When I worked at the Chevy dealership, I almost bought one. And I was like, nope, I need to take my money and finish my 54. So I'm glad I did that. I didn't have a car payment. So I finished my 54 to start my business.
But we remember those way better and faster than they actually were.
Yeah, they were gutless wonders.
They're slow as hell.
Yeah. They're still good-looking car. I think third gen, I'm a custom old-school dude, but third gens work because I grew up around them. They come, you know, I was working at Chevy dealerships with them, and they make good-looking hot rods. They make good-looking race cars. They make great-looking pro stock, like drag cars. I think they look great, you know, narrow rear end and stuff like
that. They've got way better eyeballs. So at that time, it was a Fox body. And if I have to be a guy, I guess I'm a GM guy. But the Fox body Mustangs were at the time, and they were just kicking the GM's ass at that time.
Yeah.
But the IROCs had all the eyeball, and I love the IROCs. And, in my mind, they're better than the actual, but now we have them, and you know I'll probably keep those two that way. And but the late 70s and 80s stuff is getting hotter and hotter because people our age, in their 50s, et cetera, remember that stuff as a kid. So we're moving forward from the 32s or Tri-5s and the first gen Camaros, which I still love those cars, but we're still moving, getting new stuff. And even the Hurst I got now is.
Yeah, what's the year that one?
It's an 83 Hurst Olds.
T-top car.
T-top with lightning rod shifters in it. And that's another car that I thought was a bad son of a bitch back in the day, but it was slow as hell, too.
So you motor swapped that?
It now has a Ridetech chassis, wheel and brakes. And of course, you know who did the wheels? Mike did the wheels for me again on that car right there. It's got Texas Speed LS, 580-ish horsepower, 4L80 in it, and now it runs like the Herstals should have in the day.
And then this year, actually, first time you ever did the Hot Rod Power Tour, and you did the whole Power Tour on that car.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm glad you touched on the Hot Rod Power Tour. I've been in the industry for a long time, and I've been fortunate enough to do several things in the industry, whether it be Detroit, Las Vegas, SEMA, California, wherever, you know, we've been there with our cars and showed them. I have never done the Power Tour for this year.
Mm-hmm.
I had a ball.
Yeah. The first day you were like, these aren't our people. Yeah. They're definitely not the people that are here this weekend at the KKOA. It's a different crowd of people, but man, them people live and die for that event. I mean, I know a lot about it because my wife works for the company, runs it, puts it on. So Power Tour is 6 months in our house of stuff. Yeah. But I've done it many times, probably over 15 years. I've done a few days and I've done full drive a couple times. And it is one of them, you know, I'm not sure I have to do it every year. I went down for a day this year because I just wanted to see the Project X be unveiled. If you're a hot rod guy, I think that's one of your bucket list things. You need to do Woodward Avenue once. You need to do Power Tour at least once. There's events if you're a hot rod person. Yeah. You need to experience at least once. You might fall in love with it and do it every year again. But you're like, it was fun. It was a different crowd of people, but you had a blast, didn't you?
I had a ball. And I wasn't even home, I don't believe, when I was planning next year's Power Tour already.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got that 59 DeSoto, getting engine swap. I know people getting LS swapped and overdriving it. So just to drive the Power Tour. And that's my plan, to do the Power Tour net again next year. But if you're into motorcycle, maybe you can relate to this. Going to the event is not about sitting in an asphalt parking lot baking in the sun all day.
Right.
The Power Tour is associating and talking with other hot rodders, enjoying the ride. So if it's 2 hours straight line from here to Charlotte, say, that's not what it's about. It's about going through back roads, small towns, enjoying your ride with the group of people.
And that's what you said was you enjoyed the most, was the small towns, all the locals and the kids waving at you, hollering at you. It's like the parade of hot rods are coming through a small town.
And it doesn't end. Everywhere we go, it's that way.
Yeah.
And they welcome 5,000 you through cars. That town.
Yeah.
They welcome you through that town. So it's the event of driving with, you know, 8 or 10 of your buddies down the road that we enjoy most of all. And it was way more fun than I anticipated it being. Way more fun. Yeah. So I'm planning next year already. So I wanted a wagon or big car. So now I took that original DeSoto, and that's going to be next year's Power Tour car, I think. So
cool.
That's the plan.
Okay. So we'll get heading towards wrapping up this interview here. Trying to keep it so we can do it in one segment instead of breaking it up. We're an hour and a half in so far. And she's saying, yeah, we're going to do this in two. She's waving at me. So you're also a motorcycle guy. I want to touch on this. How many years? It's been 2 years that you had your motorcycle accident?
1 year, April 1st.
Okay.
And so just a little over a year. I had a
severe motorcycle. You're a Harley guy and you're out riding. You have your helmet on. Luckily, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have your helmet on. And somebody pulled out in front of you and said you were going about 60, 65, and it was not good. We all thought you were dead. I mean, try not to get choked up here. We're very happy you're here, but it was a long road. And people come up to you and they just kind of stare at you. They're looking for the damage and you still have some issues and stuff, but it's great to have you here. Have you still with us here? And, that was a bad one. You had brain bleeds and face all swelled up and you didn't look like yourself. And you said you could see your heartbeat in your eyelids and it was a bad, bad deal, but luckily you had your helmet on.
So. It was, thank you. I appreciate that. And, it was a bad time. I've done a lot of stupid things on a motorcycle. I promise you I did. But I don't care if it's speeding or doing stupid things. And that night, I was by myself. I wasn't riding with a group or a club or drinking or doing anything stupid fast. And a guy just turned in front of me and I hit the car. And that's pretty much what I remember from that night. I did have a helmet on. I was wearing a helmet. So if you're on a bike, don't think you're too much of a badass to wear a helmet. Wear your helmet because you never know what's going to happen. It cannot be your fault. Somebody could hit you. And even with my helmet on, I did not have a Walmart-ish type helmet. I had a Shoei helmet on. I had a Neotech helmet on, which is a good helmet. And I feel it saved my ass. I had 2 traumatic brain injuries, 4 brain bleeds, and 19 broken bones, and spent a month in the hospital. And I was screwed up for several months even after I was out of the hospital.
No.
So, but now I'm back on a bike.
But you were here. You had that last April.
Yes.
And here we are the end of July, you came to Salina last year.
I did. I probably shouldn't have.
Yeah, but you were very tired and stuff, it was amazing to see, but you kind of almost, it's a long way from home, but it was almost like a mental thing, wasn't it? You had, you need to see your custom friends, and that probably helped a lot, and seeing everybody and hugging everybody, and
it does.
Yeah.
You realize the friends you have, when they don't ask you about the cars building, you can see it in their face. They're happy to see you, and they're happy that you're alive and breathing and doing well.
Yeah.
So, I appreciate those people more than you know, like you, Tim. But more importantly than the wreck, and I'm glad I'm here, and I appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers and help at that time, wear your helmet.
Yeah.
Don't quit riding your bike. Wear your helmet and be careful.
Yeah.
You know, we can recover from a broken bone or road rash, but when you
scrape your... My wife needs to wear a helmet around the house, even. That's how accident-prone she is. So.
He's not wrong.
But we can recover from certain events, but when your brain's screwed up, you may think and you're doing and saying the right thing or not. I had to learn how to walk again. I had to learn how to get dressed again. I couldn't shave. I couldn't turn on TV. I couldn't eat.
Yeah.
All because my brain was screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So wear your helmet because you're not a bad son of a bitch that you can survive a wreck like that without a helmet.
Yeah.
So wear your helmet. Keep riding your bike. Go ahead and do stupid shit. Just protect yourself.
Okay, to wrap this up, anything else you need to talk about? Is there anything we missed talking about cars or anything that you want to add, people you want to thank? Somebody you want to say, screw you too, I don't care.
We have, I'll be real quick. So we're here for the KKOA, which I'm a custom guy at heart. Tim is a custom guy at heart. Hopefully Tim reports back to you in his next podcast and tell you he's in the KKOA Hall of Fame. The Garage Museum here is badass. Come to Salina for the event and see the museum. People in our industry that I'd like to mention. We talked about Ron Francis, Roaster Shop, Fat Man Fabrications. I did a steering columns. And I know Exalta, DuPont, PPG. I'm sure I'm missing somebody. I apologize for that. Mike Curtis. If you find somebody good in our industry, be true to them and stick with them. And the guys we mentioned, I feel, are that type of guy. I'm not pushing their products over somebody else's, but make sure you have support after you buy the product. And I feel all those guys will help you afterwards.
One of the guys, a quote that I always I always remember in my mind, a guy that I look up to in the industry. We still have guys that are building cars that we look up to. And loyalty is rough in this industry. Also, in the BMX industry that we're in, people's always like the next bro deal, who's giving me a frame next year and stuff. One of my mentors that I look up to and I can ask questions of is Bobby Alloway. I read a great interview from him one time, and he says, dance with the people that you came to the dance with.
Right.
It's, you know, that's simple, but it's the loyalty of people and companies that help you get you where you are. And if it's a good product and good people, you stay with those people. You dance with those people. And I always remember that quote that Bobby Alloway said. So that's pretty good words to live by right there, I think. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And those folks will remember you and know you.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll be more willing to help you through this, you know.
Yeah.
We'll talk about what else I'd say after we're done.
Yeah. we're lucky to have these guys and friends. And I really, Carrie doesn't know anybody in the town we moved to when we moved to Tennessee. We keep to ourselves. Working a locked up shop. And I know a handful of guys in town. Of course, our car guys are working at the parts dealerships and stuff. But when we come to these events, at car shows, and BMX, those are our friends that we see.
Exactly. No matter where we're at in the country.
Yeah.
I don't care if we're in Salina, Kansas, New York, or Las Vegas.
Yeah, California, wherever.
That's our friends, period.
Yeah.
You know, and they actually care about you and your industry and your building and your cars. They care about your wife, whether she's wearing her helmet or not. And
it's weird when you think about our industry, what we do for a living. To the big world, how big the world is, we're this little micro spot on the way the world is.
Yeah.
It's so big to us, but we're not normal in the outside world. We build cars and stuff for a living. We play around with stuff, and you run in to meet people or meet a family member and say, you still working on old cars? Yeah, I am. I'm still working on old cars. Yeah.
So
I really appreciate you taking the time. We've been trying to do this on the phone for a while, and I think it's good we did it. It's like, let's go get in the air conditioning. It's 175 degrees outside in Salina, Kansas. And so I'm glad I came to Salina that year when I met you. I love you like a brother. I'm glad you're still here. You're one of my best friends, and I'm honored to have you on the podcast and hang out with you. So We're going to tidy this up. Again, Chris Ryan at Ryan's Rod and Custom. Check him out on the social medias. You won't be disappointed. Hopefully you've already heard from him. If not, you got a new hero to follow. So I think let's go grab some dinner.
Let's do it, Tim. Thank you so much. I enjoy it so much. And Carrie, thank you.
You're welcome.
Carrie's the brains behind it.
Okay, wow. I couldn't get a word in edgewise.
That was one of my best buddies in the whole world, Chris Ryan. He's went through a lot. We recorded this a year ago at the Custom Kemps of America weekend in Salina, Kansas. If you remember him mentioning about me up for the Hall of Fame, which I am happy to report I did get inducted in the KKOA Hall of Fame that night. Was really pretty cool. So who we got coming next week, Carrie?
We are going to be finishing up the episode with Daryl Starbird. Oh, really? Axel has something to say. See you next week.